episode of Nerdificent. I am your host, Iffy Wadiwe, and sitting across from me, as always, is
Danny Fernandez.
All right, you're just gonna say your name and stop.
I thought you were gonna say something else.
Oh, well, I can, but you know, it seems so finite.
The fabulous,
when you said
the wonderful. I know it is a mic drop. Just saying my own name.
Yeah.
Just saying my own name.
Oh yeah, today's gonna be a fun episode. We had quite a fun time. Watching
we
a movie
did.
In
oh
this
my
franchise,
gosh.
It was
yes.
a good time. We were guffawing, you know. It was a good one.
I thought you were gonna pee your pants.
Oh man,
we sat next to each other during this film, and
yeah.
it was a 1:30 matinee, which I highly recommend because there are also a bunch of kids in there too.
Yeah.
And listening to them giggle, like the person behind us, the girl behind us, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, they just laugh at
and
also inappropriate.
Alone. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and they sing.
It was a real experience.
Yeah, it was fun. So today we are talking about
Angry Birds.
We almost got it. We almost did it.
I don't know why I thought I should try and say it the same time as you. But.
Today, we're joined by the director of Angry Birds 2, Thurup Van Orman. Thank you.
Hey, yeah.
Thanks,
Thurup.
Yeah, thank you for... And you also played the seal, right?
I did the seal, I did the worms, and the dog most of the time. Sometimes
okay.
we use
yes.
real seals, sometimes we use real dogs.
Both of those killed you. I remember your.
I love a good recurring bit. You know, it's you know, it plays fun, and that poor dog, Frozen.
Oh my gosh, we're gonna hop into the film because honest to God, I was surprised. The humor was just so, some of it I was like, these kids are going to watch this 10 years from now and be like, what?
Yeah, oh yeah. I know. It was the perfect recipe for a kid's film where it's like, you know, a little something for some kids, a little light something for the adults if you're paying attention. And
yeah, it's funny you mentioned sitting next to the kids because when I watch, it's so fun, like the first half of the movie, the kids are like laughing all the way through and then I don't know, a third of the way through, then the parents start.
Yeah.
And then that builds, and by the end of the movie, you can't hear the kids at all anymore.
Yeah.
Their parents are laughing.
Oh, yeah. It's such a good time.
But Thurup, I wanted to also talk about some of your history before we get into the history of Angry Birds, because you have such a ginormous, is that a word? Ginormous history. You were also the storyboard artist for Camp Lazlo, the Powerpuff Girls, the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. This man has worked on essentially our childhood of everyone listening. You were also the creator of the Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. What drove you to wanting to be in animation specifically?
Well, I didn't have the internet when I was a kid, so I actually had no idea that you could have a job in animation. Simpsons, I came on when I was like 13, and it was, I loved it, but I thought, oh, that's one guy. That's one guy who got really lucky and got to make his own show. I don't know. I didn't know what I was going to do until I was 24. So I stumbled into a job making video games. My friend got a job, and I was like, what? You can have a job just doing cartoon stuff? And so I went to CalArts because that's where you went to school to do animation.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel like that's still the same today?
I think a lot of the creative people, a lot of the directors and show creators and stuff do come out of CalArts because you do, you get a pretty solid foundation there. And actually, probably more than anything, it's just because it already has that clout. So when you get there, it's like, I'm not the best person I know at arts anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone is so good. And coming into it so late and having no idea that existed, for me, it was like Hogwarts. It was like, oh my gosh, this, now everything makes sense. Why I'm a weirdo. this is what you can do with it. But then you push yourself because you feel bad. You feel bad that everyone's so much better than you at everything. And everyone's better than you at something, no matter how good you are, at CalArts. So it really pushes you, to up your work ethic. And you learn things from these people. You learn like, oh, people really laugh at that joke they do. Oh, people really get bored when you make really self-indulgent student films.
So, like, aside from The Simpsons, were there cartoons that you were really drawn to growing up that you feel like influenced you?
Ren and Stimpy was a big one. Yeah, I mean, all of the cartoons. Smurfs was my favorite. Yeah. I think Smurfs and He-Man, I would probably have said to my friends He-Man was my favorite, but totally Smurfs was.
Yeah. You give off a Smurfs vibe. I can see that.
Papa Smurf.
Yeah, so why don't we just dive straight in, if you do want to dive into...
Yeah, Angry Birds, let's get this nitty-gritty out the way, and we kick it all off with an explanation like this. Angry Birds is a video game franchise created by the Finnish company Rovio Entertainment. The series focuses on multicolored birds which try to save their eggs from green-colored pigs, their enemies. Inspired by Crush the Castle, the game has been praised for a successful combination of fun gameplay, comical style, and low price. Its popularity led to many spin-offs... spin-off versions of Angry Birds created for PCs and video game consoles, a market for merchandise featuring its characters, a televised animated series, and a feature film. By January 2014, there had been over 2 billion downloads across all platforms, including both regular and special editions. By July 2015, the series' games had been downloaded more than 3 billion times collectively.
3 billion?
3 billion.
Whoa!
3 billion. Making it the most downloaded freemium game series of all time. Eat that, Fortnite. The original Angry Birds has been called one of the most mainstream games out right now. One of the great runaway hits of 2010 and the largest mobile app successes the world has ever seen so far. An animated feature film based on the series was released by Columbia Pictures on the 20th of May in 2016, and the first main series sequel, Angry Birds 2, What It Do, was released on July 30th of 2015. Is that... I don't think that's right.
Is that right?
No.
What is that? That ain't right. You know when you're reading something? Oh, they're talking about the game. Okay, they're the game Angry Birds
You're
2.
Like looking at your phone. Yeah, like,
that was wild. The sequel to the game, Angry Birds 2, was released in July 2015. Okay. I thought we went back in time for a second. I was losing my mind.
There's something really cool. We had Sam Mag, who is a game developer on and for Insomniac Games, and she was saying that she goes and talks to groups of little girls about gaming, and that she'll be like, how many of you consider yourself a gamer? And a lot of them won't raise their hands. And she's like, but how many of you play, say, Angry Birds? And they'll all raise their hand. And she was like, then you're a gamer. That is a game that you're playing. It's just so funny that people have in their head, like, oh, if it's not Fortnite, if it's not, you know, World of Warcraft or something like that, then they don't consider it a game. But she likes to say, like, no, this is a game. If you look like you have thoughts.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And I just think it's funny that people are like, oh, if I play Angry Birds, I'm not a gamer. Because its mechanics are very similar to a game I used to play a lot called Gunbound, where my Gunbound heads. It was this old Nexon game where you were in these little gunships and you used basically physics to aim your shots and they would shoot across the map. And it was based off of like an even older game, but you can customize the ship. But that's kind of the same kind of skeleton of Angry Birds, is you're aiming the shot to hit it, and you have different types of ammunition. So it, to me, it's funny when it's like, oh no, I remember staying up late till 1 on the phone with my friends, we're strategizing and like ganging up against people, and like it's just a simpler like version that you can just play on your phone.
Yeah, mobile games are games.
Oh yeah, no.
So they require a lot of skill, and then people get really good at them.
A lot of the you mentioned Fortnite, a huge base plays mobile. A lot of the kids, and that's what I think I've said this on an earlier episode, is the great equalizer, because like consoles run for like what, $200-$300. A cell phone,
true,
most kids have it. So like if you have a smartphone, you can play this like AAA game, Fortnite, which is why like everyone feels some type of way. I remember when I talked about the Diablo mobile game and a few of y'all slid into DMs and we had, some civilized conversation. But like mobile, that's why I like am excited by the idea of mobile games, because I caught this 5-6 years ago, back when Infinity Blade came out for the iPhone. But that's just my whole like aside on mobile gaming and like its growth and how much it's impacted. Like back when Infinity Blade, like the concept of cross-platform, you can literally play Fortnite with someone on a PS4. that is crazy. So now you're not that, you know, like if you want to go way back when you're the kid who didn't have the Genesis or the SNES and you couldn't play long. Nope, you have a cell phone. You can play with your friends whose parents were able to get them a PS4 or an Xbox One. You include, like, that is beautiful in its own self.
I did not realize that Angry Birds was breaking down class and economic barriers by allowing gameplay to everybody. That's really cool. You learn new things on this podcast all the time. So I know that you have kids. Were they playing Angry Birds? Like, how were you? What was your first introduction to it before you tapped on to this as a director? I'm sure that you saw it or might have had it on your phone or your kids' phones or...
To be totally honest, I had never played the game or watched the movie.
That's fine.
When they asked me to make this one, but I did after they asked me to do this
You did
movie.
Your research.
I'm not a gamer at all. My first job was video games, and I realized really quickly, if I get into video games, like, I want to be good at it, and I will not stop.
Mm-hmm.
And is that really what I want to do with all of my time? So it was all or nothing, and I was like, maybe I'll just not play video games. I'll make them. I'll play through as much as I need to know to know how it works. But I think one reason that I went into storytelling is I like the stories. I like telling the stories. I like telling a tale. And in video games, something that's super cool about video games, they say, like, the golden rule of making the perfect video game is it should take a minute to learn and a lifetime to master.
Okay.
And so, like, you suck them in quick, and then once you got your hooks in, like, they're just, like, trying to reach a higher unattainable level, and I think that's super cool. It's kind of similar to TV because you don't give them too much. And movies, though, you want to wrap it up. You want to give them a conclusive ending and make them feel like they accomplished something and they gained something at the end of the day, and there's not more out there, and have, like, this unsatisfied, I got to get right back into it. And I love that. I love that about TV and movies. I guess just the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah. And video games, that definitely has a overlap with video games as well, I feel like. One of the reasons why this was so successful, I feel like people really latched on to the characters.
Well, it's funny because, I feel like, you know, Angry Birds 1, you know, kind of, like, rode the wave of the popularity of the game, and 2, you know, and I'm not just saying this because you're in here, I'd say it if you weren't in here, really kind of, like, the improv term is heightening and and just, like, blowing out the world, and it really did, like, flesh out these characters and, like, I think tackled some very interesting themes, and just the aspect of, like, doing things for because you want to be wanted and not necessary, you know, and just, like, that was really exciting and fun.
I think also in improv, it's playing at the top of your intelligence.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what the film did as well. Yeah, so just wrapping up about the development, in early 2009, Rovio staff began reviewing proposals for potential games. One such proposal came from senior game designer Jaco Lisolo in form of a simulated screenshot featuring some angry-looking birds with no visible legs or wings, while the picture gave no clue as to what type of game was being played. I love that, just, like, taking it in. Like, remember that whoever first pitched Mario, that would have just been hilarious. This plumber who has to rescue a princess. Stay with me here, everybody. Again, it was after Crush the Castle. This is the funniest part to me. At the time, the swine flu epidemic was also in the news. So the staff made the birds enemies pigs, as you do. And Angry Birds was the studio's 52nd produced game in its initial release. And like you said, it did huge numbers here.
So when it first came out, though, it didn't sell that many copies, and it was after it was featured after it was a featured app on the UK App Store in February 2010. It quickly reached number one and it blew up. It's funny how a little visibility, you know, it was like, this is tight, y'all. Like, that's what the App Store was like. You're like, yo, don't sleep on this.
It's like being on the front page of Netflix. I feel like they always get that huge boost. I would not have found Schitt's Creek that way.
Yeah.
Oh, me neither. I love Schitt's Creek.
Oh, it's so good. I've rewatched it so many times. Which character do you gravitate towards?
It started with David.
Ew, because
he's such a good character. And then slowly, I love more and more. Alexa.
Yeah.
And actually the mom, who was my least favorite character, because I was like, all right, Moira. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Moira, she's the most fascinating now. She just owns that character so much. Yeah. It's amazing. Oh,
I just love that they let her take whatever risks she wants. Yeah. Like if she just like says like bebe or whatever. She just like pronounces things how they shouldn't be pronounced. They're just like, cool, go with it.
Yeah, yeah. Rocking.
Love it. We have to take a really quick break. Then we're going to jump into the films of Angry Birds right after this.
All right. And welcome back to Nerdificent. We're back and we're going to jump right into the movies. Yeah. So Angry Birds, the first movie was the Angry Birds movie, also known simply as Angry Birds. It was released in the UK as such. So, the plot, because this is important when we talk about two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In one, it was about a reclusive, temperamental, outcast bird named Red who lived in a village called Bird Island with other flightless birds who lead angerless lives. When his temper causes a premature hatching of another bird's egg, he is sentenced to attend an anger management class, the maximum penalty on the island. Red's classmates, Chuck, who is hyperactive and can move at hypervelocity, and Bomb, who can cause explosions with his anger and fear, try to befriend him, but he avoids them because he's angry. One day, a boat docks at the island shore, damaging Red's house. The birds are greeted by green-colored pigs and their captain, Leonard, who claim to be peaceful explorers, bringing offerings of friendship. The pigs ingratiate themselves with the birds by introducing them to various innovations, notably a giant slingshot, but begin to overwhelm the island with their numbers. Red becomes suspicious. He recruits Chuck and Bomb to find Mighty Eagle, the only flying bird in the island, who has not been seen for many years. They find Mighty Eagle on top of Bird Mountain, but he is overweight, self-absorbed, and leads the life of a slacker. Has not flown in years and refuses to help them. Red discovers that the pigs planting dynamite around the island while other birds are distracted with the rave party, but they arrive too late to sound a warning. The pigs escape with the eggs and activate the dynamite, destroying the village. The other birds apologize to Red for not believing him. Under his leadership, they organize an army and construct a boat from rubble, follow the pigs to Pig Island, and the battle ensues. They win.
Red is a champion. Yeah, he's a hero.
Yeah, he's a hero.
Yeah, so we had Jason Sudeikis, Josh Gad, Danny McBride, Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Peter Dinklage, just a part of the cast. Then we hop into Angry Birds 2.
Yeah.
Woo woo.
And we had all of the cast returning, right? Most of them.
Almost
Josh
all of
was
them.
There, Jason.
I wish that we had Kate McKinnon.
Okay.
I love her. She is my hero. And
oh boy.
Yeah. We had to make room for some new characters, and unfortunately she didn't come back, but I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like getting to work with, let's say, Jason as Red? I mean, taking on that role again.
it was amazing. He's so smart. I mean, most of these actors, you think they're just reading scripts or whatever, but he is such a smart collaborator, such a great improver. So you throw him a line, he's never seen it before, and he has like this catalog of funny lines that serve the same purpose, but are like, oh man, that's better. Super good, super smart. And actually, most of this movie was very improv driven. Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah. So we didn't have writers for most of the movie.
Oh my God.
We had writers
so cool.
Like for a few months at the beginning and then a few months, like three-fourths of the way through. But we treated it like in TV, we do storyboard-driven shows where you have an outline and we figured out like the backbone of the movie and then we improv. So with the storyboard artist, it was a very yes and, oh, and then we could do this. And with the actors, we did the same thing. So we tried a lot of ideas up front. We had like, yeah, basic idea of what the movie was and where we needed to get to. But we did a lot of playing around with the actors and with all of the artists. It was fun.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I wanted to say is like, well, so, you know, Angry Birds 1 comes out. Was there anything from one that kind of like where that you were like, okay, I want to take it this way? Like, how was the baton handed off to you?
On the first movie, they had their job was to sell why they're making a movie based on the game, and it's Angry Birds, so it has to be about anger, and that is such a hard thing to tackle. Like, this is why anger is really good.
Yeah.
Which maybe it is, but it's still hard to tell a story.
Yeah.
A story about that. So in this movie, we didn't really have to do that. I mean, we could delve deeper into his issues, but it's not just about anger issues. And that was very nice to just be able to get into like more real emotions and why he's vulnerable. And then as far as like the storytelling that we got to explore on this movie, we didn't have to have them enemies. And I think that's really hard. And I think it's hard to like feel good about making this movie like, yeah, we were justified hating these guys.
Yeah.
Which they had to do in the first movie. And this one we could like, okay, they hated each other at the end of the first movie. Let's pair them up. Let's force them to work with the people they don't, or not people, birds and pigs that they didn't want to work with. And that's hard. And it's hard even amongst Red's friends and his friend's sister. Like, he's got some issues. He's got some trust issues to work out. And I think working on a movie with a bunch of other people, it was kind of the metaphor for working on the movie. The movie metaphor was also the behind the scenes metaphor. It's definitely harder to work with a bunch of other people and collaborate, and everyone has their own ideas that they're trying to cram in there, and they don't always go together.
Would you say there's too many hens in the hen house?
Danny. Danny, please.
I did want to say that kind of remind, one of my favorite movies is Nightmare Before Christmas, but like essentially the message is stay in your lane. I still think it's fabulous and I love it. I love so many things about it, but it's like at the end people are like, so don't venture out and try.
just do what you're good at.
Just do what you're good
at. Stop trying to be extra.
So we did. It was so funny. Iffy leaned over to me, was like, who is that? And for Zeta, and it was Leslie Jones.
Yeah.
What was it like getting to work with her?
It was amazing. She'd worked on one thing before in animation, and I think it wasn't the best experience for her. It was a smaller role, and I think she came in like nervous, which was so weird for me because I wasn't nervous.
Yeah.
But I love Leslie Jones, and I was just like, it was weird going into this, like, these famous people are nervous and I'm not nervous. Yeah. I should be the one.
Yeah.
But she was a freaking hoot. I think within like 5 minutes, she was like, we were laughing at each other's jokes and playing around. And she saw like, oh, I can just be myself. Okay, yeah. I can do that. Yeah. And so I would feed her lines like, okay. And she was comfortable, like, just like reading the script. But I was like, okay, we don't have to do exactly that. Here's what's happening in the scene. This is how you're feeling. This is where we need to get to. And then she would riff. And by far, that's the best stuff.
Yeah. Just allowing the art, like allowing the comedians to take risks and be themselves.
Yeah. No, that it was real fun having her play and stuff. And I think just, you know, just because we keep bouncing and talking about the comedy in this film was super fun. You know, I'm going to keep it like all the way real, and I don't feel bad because you didn't work on it, but I didn't see the first one, so I came in with two, and I really regretted didn't bring my daughter because there was like a little baby shark nod, and I knew that she would have been locked in. But yeah, no, it really it's so funny because we're raving about it online, and people were like, really? And I'm like, please just go see it. And it seemed like if I had to, like, you know, do like an armchair analysis. And I think it was kind of like the first movie had the hard task of kind of being more of an adaptation of a mobile app. And y'all had to have fun with just telling a story using a character that they introduced in the first movie. And it's such a fun story. I mean, yeah, Leslie, Tiffany is great, and just even, you know, the eagle, you know, you guys picked up the torch from the arc that they kind of like introduced from the first one and like dunked it in such a fun way. You know, I feel it's like, look, y'all, I know you're gonna be like, if he's over here being a shill, I'm like, look, go see it and tell me what you think. Go in the Discord, you could tell me what you think. Thurup won't be in there, so you can be honest, but I'm sure you're gonna love it.
Discord.
I don't want to kick you out the Discord, Thurup.
You can be in it, but it's actually the highest rated video game adaptation movie.
Right now it is taking the throne as the highest rated video game movie, and it deserves that praise because Resident Evil is an experience. The first one started off real good, and that's what I'll say.
I wanted, before we wrap up on Leslie Jones as Zeta, what can you tell people about essentially that new character that was introduced?
So Zeta is the villain in this movie. When we were trying to figure out who the villain is and what her personality was, we saw an old, I don't remember if it was Jimmy Kimmel, but she was on a talk show and said, you know what I've always wanted to do? I've always wanted to be a villain in a movie.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh, huh, hmm.
Iffy and I, we got to get on Conan before Iffy. Yeah.
First step, get on Conan. Step one.
Okay, so you saw her and you were like, wow, so the character was made for her?
Yep.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool.
Yeah, totally. And so we designed the character after her, I think personality-wise especially.
Oh yeah.
And we tried to write for Leslie Jones and tried to anticipate what her real character would be feeling or whatever. And it kind of worked before we had her recorded, but it was kind of like flat and dry and it's like mustache twirly villain. And then she came in and really put her personality into it. And then it was like, oh my God, this is the best character. she really had fun with it and really put a lot of herself into it, which was amazing.
So here's my big question. Because it's always interesting working with like an already established IP. Was Rovio precious with, you know, the IP at all? Were they, you know, nervous about any like new characters, or were they kind of gave you like their great good graces and was like, we trust you, do what you do, Dura?
For them, almost 1,000,000%. That's what they did. The only thing that they threw out there was like, just at the end, could you have them go back to the pigs and the birds going back to fighting? Well, no, that's not really what we're doing. But we'll throw in a few like jokey jabs. How about that? And they were totally cool with that. They were amazing. Some of the fans have had the hardest time because we weren't precious about the video games at all.
Yeah.
And there's a new character in the video games, Silver, was a character. And I never even played the game. I didn't look at it. I was like, no, we're going to do our own thing. She's going to be really cute and really smart and really fun. I've got maybe 100.
What?
100 DMs today from fans are like, I hate this new Silver.
Y'all leave this man alone. Y'all leave this man alone.
It's almost
she
like,
was a great. What is their wait? Okay, so what is their complaint about her, or that she's just not like the game?
Two different things. She's not like the game, so her character's different. Most of those have kind of died away. A whole world that I didn't know existed was Angry Birds fan fiction.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them are like...
You stepped in someone's seat. Yeah. Sorry, bro.
No, my OC is dating Red, so he can't like this other girl.
No.
That's what's happening.
That's amazing. Wow. I love it. Oh, yes.
The fan fiction community... I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have been on those boards. Not in the Angry Birds level, but definitely on the anime level. I felt like she was done in such a... It was perfect because it was like, I'm so used to being the girl that has the answers and she's smart. And it's like she's kind of looked over and people don't trust her and she has to prove herself twice as much. And it was like such a great commentary. And especially for, you know, young girls to see. I love that aspect of it and kind of read. I think I tweeted this out that it was something that did tackle like toxic masculinity and this feeling of identity and insecurity that he has where he feels like he has to be in control or else people won't, or he has to be the center, the hero, or people won't love him as he is. But just the fact that she is brilliant and that kind of gets, you know, pushed aside for a while. I love that was done.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So
I just did a quick, because I wanted to see what the Angry Birds Silver was. I'm in the Angry Birds wiki. They are detailed. They are strong. You can't underestimate how many communities there are around there. And there will be someone who's like, actually, and let me know, nerd fam. Do we have any nerd fam who's like our Angry Birds stan? Because I'm sure you will have more than a few choice words for us. But yeah, no, it's I thought Silver was super fun and great. And I mean,
played by Rachel Bloom.
I know. Good friend. also a fellow LA native like me. Hey, Rachel, do you listen? I don't know. I doubt it.
She does follow me.
Oh, really?
So. I should say, back to Rachel in a second, but there are maybe 5 people who are mad about the silver design. Okay. It's not
giant. Yeah, you know, and sometimes those people are really loud, and I would say the majority of people have been super supportive, and I've seen it on my Twitter, and that's not just because I follow you and Matthew Cherry. I can see everything you guys are retweeting, but I have seen so many people that have really praised this film. I do want to talk about Rachel Bloom, though, and the rest of the cast, including Sterling K. Brown, but we have to take a really quick break, so we're going to hop back in right after this. And we're back. One thing that I wanted to say about Rachel Bloom, my favorite thing that I always tell people is that she talks about how she got rejected like 6 times in one day when she was pitching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. On one single day, she went out and she had, you know, throughout the weeks had pitched to a bunch of networks, and they all called her back on the same day, and she got like 6 rejections, one after the other after the other.
Oh.
And CW was the only one that gave her a chance, and that totally paid off for them. Taking a risk on her. But I just remind my friends of that whenever they're having a hard time, that it's like, you know, you can get rejected that many times. It just takes that one yes to pop in there.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm. What was your first yes? Or like when did you feel like that was a moment that it was like, yes, I have made it in?
It was slow. It wasn't a moment, because I pitched when I was at CalArts. I knew, all right, I have to bust my ass, because for the rest of my life, I could work at a coffee shop and probably either get fired or quit every couple months.
Yeah.
Because what I want to do is be an artist, or I can bust ass now and make something happen for myself and then have a like decent job as an artist. So I developed Flapjack while I was at CalArts, and I pitched it. And I was so stoked to get in, like, wow, I did it. I made it. I'm going to pitch this, and they're going to love it. It's going to be their favorite show. And then while I was pitching it, the lady I was pitching to was, like, waving to people out her door and, like, reading stuff on
oh,
her desk
no.
And looking out the window. And it was, like, very clear, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just waiting for me to finish so you can say no, because I'm a kid and I'm a student at school. And she gave me a few notes and feedback or whatever after, and then I came back like, okay, so I addressed those notes and I want to pitch to you again. And she's like, oh, you know, I kind of just thought of that as a student pitch. Come back when you have some experience and are ready. And it was like, so heartbreaking, yeah. For me. And I like kept taking tests to do storyboards on different shows. And then eventually only got in, Cartoon Network, because I kept pushing them to start a free internship program, and then I came in on the free internship program. And then once you're in, it's like it's so much easier. And I'm not advocating work for free, but that's totally the only thing that has worked for me.
Yeah.
Because I was like paying tuition, which was a ton of money, and I couldn't afford school anymore. But okay, I'll pay tuition so that I can go work this free job.
Yeah.
And then I think it was the first day, at least within the first couple days, I was on Powerpuff Girls, which is a show that I loved, and I was in the writer's room. They let me go in the writer's room, and they're like, well, we're out of ideas. We've already done everything. And so I was like, okay, this is my chance.
Yeah.
I can do it. So I went home and wrote 6 episodes, and I brought them in the next day. They bought them, and they let me storyboard. And then when I started storyboarding, people would compliment me and say, oh my gosh, that was so funny or whatever. And every one of those people, I was like, hey, could you go tell the development exec that you thought it was really funny?
Yeah.
So the next time I went in to pitch my show, I mean, this was my plan, was they were looking for a reason to say yes instead of a reason to say no. They'd already heard from 10 people who'd said, oh, you know, the next person who should have a show, you should have thorough pitch.
Yeah.
So the next time I went in to pitch, they already went in with that confidence, like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And then they picked up Flapjack.
Flapjack, yeah.
I love Bubby.
Yeah, I love Bubby, too.
Bubby is, like, just comedically so funny in the horrid action, all the wild stuff Flapjack gets into. I love Flapjack.
Thanks. Actually, Roz Ryan and and I have almost exactly that relationship. She treats me like a little baby, and I love her. She is so like a motherly figure to me, and still, like, every time I talk to her, she gives me a big hug. Oh, Thora, baby, how are you doing? And, like, exactly oh, the relationship, man, of Flapjack and Bubby. And actually, Brian Doyle Murray and I have a very similar relationship also, where he's just like, all right, shut up. Let's get this done.
See, people, it takes some rejection before you don't give up on your dreams. I mean,
that's the grind. Is like, I always say, people always think it's like a shot, and it's really more so just a battle of attrition. Like, it feels like everyone who, you know, was like, it didn't work, it was because they just got done. And everyone, like, you know, if you're just here, eventually they got to say yes.
Yeah, a million percent. Everything that I've pitched has gotten rejected so many times. And then I rework it and I figure out, like, okay, I still 100% believe in this. What is working for me and isn't working for them? How do I find the way in to everyone so that this resonates with them the same way that it does with me?
Yeah, but do you ever just, like, for me, I wrote something that, like, some really respected people just loved and adored and some other people just didn't like, and I just was like, I think I got to let that go.
Yeah.
A part of me, at least. I guess I thought, like, maybe it's not going to resonate with everyone.
Yeah. I think it really is just like, there are people who are going to be fans of you, and there's people who you're not going to be for. And if you, as long as you don't hang up on that and just make sure you find your people, that's who you want anyway. I oftentimes see a lot of people fighting for people to be their people when they're not. And then you see, like, they eventually do get them, and then they're kind of almost beholden to what this, like, fringe group of their fan base likes, because they don't want to lose them, not realizing that the fan base at large, you know, is there for them, are a fan of what they create. So that's kind of like the basis of, I think, a lot of creative stuff, because I think when the creative growth process, in my, like, weird mind, is like, you start off doing what you like, and by what I mean what you like, you like you're kind of making homages to the things that inspire you, and then you start to venture more into professional stuff, and then you start to try and make things you think that people will like, and then eventually you mature, and then you just go back to making the stuff you like, but the stuff that really your voice you like, and then that's when you really find the most success.
Yeah, because you're the most passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I think, like, within the last few years, there's so much more of a market for that.
Because
you don't have to appeal to everyone anymore. You don't have to appeal to, like, every 7 to 12-year-old kid. You can just make something you love, and the audience will find it with streaming, because you don't have to aim commercials at them.
Yeah.
You can only sell a show or a movie or whatever if you can sell the commercial time to this age demographic, and that's gone out the window. Yeah. That's amazing. It's such a cool time to be making TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
So we did tease Sterling K. Brown. He is a new character, Gary Pig, who I didn't even realize that was him
I was like, man, it almost has a tinge of Idris in there, but I was like, I would know. Like, Idris, I would have locked in, also because I just saw Hobbs and Shaw. So his, but I was like, who is it? And when I saw Sterling at the end, I was like, oh.
Yeah, how did that combo come together? Like, picking him for that particular character?
I think that we just loved him. and I think he was on Saturday Night Live, and his shtick was that he would just start crying all the time, because that's what he does on This Is Us.
Yeah.
He's, like, such a good crier, and like, you're, like, emotionally with him all the time, and so they ran that as a bit, and so we're like, all right, this guy's getting upset all the time, that'd be really funny if we used Sterling K. Brown. But we didn't want to do that exact bit,
right?
And it's funny, because most of the characters we just drew so much from their personality,
yeah.
and they became their character because of the personality of the actor. Sterling K. Brown is the least like Gary you could possibly be. He's the, like, the nicest, most sincere, like, down for whatever person. And maybe that's why we ended up making his character the opposite, because we thought that was funny. Like, let's make this guy an asshole.
Yeah.
And then he just started playing around with the British accent, and that's funny. That works. Let's do it. So we just rolled with it.
We'll start wrapping up. But what I did want to say is that I saw your tweet that you said there's no better place to be right now than at Sony Animation. It sounds like they're really allowing filmmakers to take the risks. We definitely saw that with a lot of not only the heart, but also the humor that you were allowed to do in this film, which I love that.
Yeah. Christine Belson, who's the head of the studio, is amazing. And I think I've worked with some really amazing execs, and I've worked with some who are less amazing. And usually the reason they're less amazing is because they're really self-conscious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they give you a note, and they just want you to do it, and they don't want to talk about it. And someone like Christine, who, if you didn't know better, it might seem like the opposite, because she always says, oh, I don't know, maybe something like this. She knows exactly what she's talking about, but she's giving you freedom. That's your out to not have to do exactly what I just said, but along these lines, this is what we need. And that's the best creative note that you can give. Like, it's missing this thing, and somewhere around here, just think about a better way to do it. And that's everything. Mm-hmm. And I think she really sees the value in more original ideas. I think the new Sony lineup is going to be a lot more original movies, which is amazing. A lot more like creator-driven ideas, which is amazing. They're not all IPs. They're not all these well-known entities that you already know what it is. It's like, it's exciting because it's like the new stuff. All right, let's see a bunch of new stuff. By people who know how to tell a story. And that's super exciting to me.
Yeah. It's what a lot of people have been asking for, too. Yeah. So it's cool that they're doing that. I guess just to wrap it up, what do you hope that audiences take away from Angry Birds 2?
I think the movie is really a metaphor for life. I think it's a metaphor for everyone. It's about working together with others who are different than you, and together being able to do something you could do on your own. It's not easier. It's almost always harder, but it's way more fulfilling. And at the in the long run, you get something better.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Where can people find you?
Literally just Google Thurup. Twitter, just type in Thurup.
You're Instagram, the number one Thurup?
Just type in Thurup. Yeah, I think so.
You don't have to take your screen name from someone else.
Yeah.
There's like 40 Danny Fernandezes.
And there's a very big soccer player who you finally beat out on Google.
And a magician who he actually has a show on Netflix. So he and I are really going. I'm just waiting.
I think it's Little Thurup on Instagram, because I I created Thurup and then I forgot my password.
So you have both Thurups.
Love it. And Angry Birds is out. Angry Birds 2 is out right now in theaters. Check it out. And also our friend Matthew Cherry has Hair Love, the short that he directed is also before it. So both awesome pieces that you can see.
You will cry in Hair Love. It is beautiful.
Crying like a baby before anything even happened. Just when the Dread Dad came, I was like, I'm a Dread Dad.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to get you.
Yeah, it was, but yeah, you know me, If You Wadiway on Twitter and Instagram, If D's on Twitch, if you want to see me playing video games. Check Twitter for upcoming show dates.
I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. I'm going to be at New York Comic Con. How did I say that? New York Comic Con. I will be posting my panel, so check me out on Twitter and Instagram. I'll definitely have the dates and rooms, you know, in the next week of those. So, but I will see you there, New York. And as we always say, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.